It's incredibly gratifying. It really is, especially when I hear people in a place where I wouldn't even imagine that our model would be useful to them, saying that how touched they are by it and how they're able to use it in their everyday life, their professional life, their personal lives. I love knowing that they find that, and I learn from that, and I see that the reach and the spread of our model is kind of taking on a life of its own now.
The Center for Understanding and Conflict welcomes you to The Other Chair, a monthly podcast exploring the dynamics of conflict and how to bring the human issues to the table. Together with our guests, we explore how the power of understanding each other can lead to better solutions for people on both sides of an issue. We will also share tips for managing your own mediation practice, approaching conflict in the professional world, and ways to apply our understanding-based model in your personal life. Hello to our listeners, and welcome to The Other Chair. My name is James Dyke. Today's guest is Gary Friedman, author, mediator, and co-founder of the Center for Understanding and Conflict, a nonprofit educational institute dedicated to advancing the understanding-based approach to conflict resolution and mediation. This year, the center celebrates 40 years of conflict resolution and mediation training programs, many with Gary, who still trains with us today. On today's episode, we are looking back at the last four decades of impact and ahead to see what the future holds. Hello again, Gary, and welcome back to The Other Chair.
Thank you, James.
I appreciate you being here today. You know, we're celebrating 40 years, and you know, we talk a lot about, and I think our first podcast episode was you really diving into the how the organization was founded, how you and Jack came together to put the model together. And what I wanted to do today in inviting you back at the end of the year is to kind of talk about your experience, what it's been like as the model and the field, the mediation field has evolved since you started doing this work and how the center has grown.
What I've recently realized is one of our seed ideas at the beginning of all this maybe seems to be getting lost as the model becomes more sophisticated and we apply it in different areas. But I think the original impulse of mediating and was to empower people, and that really we really felt that people needed an alternative to having their lives run by lawyers, and for them to be able to and not to be disqualified from having the power to make decisions just because they disagreed with each other. So that seed of empowerment was really important and continues to be important today, not just in our approach to conflict resolution, but also to training programs. What we realize is in our training programs, we're trying to do something that feels congruent with what we do when we work with people in conflict. And so we watch very carefully when we're teaching to see whether or not we're walking our talk, and empowering the trainees is as important as empowering the people who have the conflict when we're mediating or helping people in conflict. So that's really a kind of core piece that I just want to emphasize so that people will kind of hold us to that, because there's a lot of confusion now about how people see our model. They see our model as, oh, these are the non-caucus people. We're dogged by that label. And non-caucus is important for sure, but not even as important as the thing that we think is really much more pernicious is people holding secrets as part of the caucus. But what's really underlying all of that is empowerment of people. And we think that people will have more power if they're together in the same room and they know what's going on, then they're in a position to be able to make decisions. So that was the original impulse of teaching and mediating. And it remains a kind of through line to today.
Now, you mentioned this impulse of empowerment, how it's kind of murky now from when you began. Are you talking about within the center's work and teaching with the model, it's drifted a little bit? Are you talking within the wider field of mediation?
the wider field. Yeah, the wider field, people really don't, we're labeled as, sometimes we're labeled as facilitative, sometimes we're labeled as non-caucus model. Len Riskin wrote an article called The Grid of Different Approaches to Mediation, and he couldn't actually, he is always very familiar with us, he couldn't actually place us on his grid, partly because we have a different stance about law than many models that call themselves facilitative. So there's a lot of stuff to kind of get straightened out with the public and within the profession about who we are and who we're not.
And how can people who are involved, who've taken the training, or who are trainers themselves of this model, or who may even be considering this but are familiar with conflict resolution and mediation, how can they help keep the focus where it belongs on what's unique to this organization's approach and to the model that you created?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's mainly by keeping their eye on this ball and other balls that are kind of like that. So we don't want to get caught up into saying our model is the best model any more than we want to say that mediation should replace the adversary system. We think there's a place for our model. We think it's an important impulse that we're responding to, not just in terms of training and mediating and dealing with conflict, but also how we stand in the world, how we proceed as citizens, as parents, in all the various activities that make up our lives.
So 40 years, I imagine when you and Jack, co-founded this organization, but really co-founded the understanding-based approach, you may not have realized that you were beginning a lifetime of training and development. I believe we're at over 10,000 mediators across a variety of disciplines. What has that experience been like for you from when you first began through all of this work that you've done since?
Well, it's kind of crept up on us. 40 years, sometimes it feels like it was just a few years ago that we started this. So much has been just incremental changes, and there are different markers that we've gone through. Originally, people thought of us as these are the people, they hate lawyers because we're trying to empower people. That wasn't true. And there's an evolution that's happened in conflict resolution and in mediation that kind of parallels that of us. And it used to be, at the beginning, when I started to mediate, people said, this is illegal, you can't do this. And there was a big feeling that this is an anti-lawyer organization and an approach to conflict resolution. It wasn't true. But then evolutionarily wise, they got interested. The people in the courts, and they decided mediation was a good thing. And when they decided mediation was a good thing, they kind of did what we thought was a pretty weird thing, which was they started ramming it down people's throats, making it mandatory. And for us, it seemed kind of oxymoronic to be thinking about it like that, to be imposing on people a process that they had to do rather than see whether it was something they wanted to do. And so we had to develop our own way of proceeding with the people that we're mediating with and also the people we're teaching, so that we invite people to try on the model. We don't say, this is it, this is what you should be doing. And we don't know whether, and especially as so many different kinds of people coming to the training programs, and many of them now not even for mediation, it's really important that we hold on to another really important seed idea, which is that what we're really hoping is that people will find a way to use our model in which they can feel like they can be themselves. And that will look differently for people depending on where they're coming from and where they're going back to, who they are, what they're interested in. And so people will mediate using or help people be conflict professionals using our model, and it'll look really different than other people. That's not only okay, that's kind of the point. And that's also the point of even as we're evolving and having, you know, new teachers and training teachers, and that's become a major focus right now, training new teachers so that the teachers feel empowered to actually be themselves and adapt what they find useful from our model. And if there's something else moves them, to be able to, you know, take our approach seriously, but ultimately they have to make it their own.
Conflict manifests itself in many ways in our personal lives, for professionals in the workplace and for practitioners who have made a career bringing together parties in conflict through mediation practice. Each month, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts live webinars with featured guests discussing best practices and sharing their experiences for tackling conflict using the understanding-based model. Talk a little bit more about, if you wouldn't mind, the transition from developing this model with Jack out of a frustration with the system that you were a part of to training others to do it. How did you make that leap from just trying to find a solution for yourself to wanting to share that broadly and then, you know, teach others how to do it? And what were your motivations for doing that?
Jack was never very interested in the long view. He said, whatever this is going to become is what it's going to become. I said, what kind of legacy do you want to have? He said, I couldn't care less. We do what we can. And I appreciate that spirit, but it's not the way I think of it. And I think there's some things that are really important that I'm hoping we can kind of pass on that to the next generation of teachers. But always, we've always had in mind that the best way to teach teachers is to actually show them what we do and give them a chance to do what we do and to learn experientially, instead of having a whole set of this is the theory and we've always been experiential heavy and in helping people kind of find their own way and in the teaching as well. So we try to apply teaching principles that are congruent with the way we think people ought to deal with conflict and also help others.
Then a question about, you know, our impact in the community over all these years. You know, the Center for Understanding and Conflict is a nonprofit organization. It serves the public good. And there are now many, I imagine there weren't so many when you first started, but now there are many people in the marketplace who are selling trainings. They have businesses doing this kind of work or for-profit entities by and large. What was your motivation for forming the center as a nonprofit organization for community benefit rather than in more traditional ways?
Well, we were never interested in making a lot of money, nor were we interested in developing a large organization. So we always called it a pop and pop shop. And so we were just kind of going from program to program and trying to respond, what is it that people need that will help them either to be better conflict professionals or to teach? And we thought that they would learn the teaching by coming to programs, and sometimes people came. Catherine Connor, one of our erstwhile almost founders, practically, I think she came to, you know, 7 or 8 programs, and that was the way she learned to teach. And because of her experience, we now have reduced a lot of our stuff to writing, and people don't have to go through it like that. And we have more formalized thinking about becoming teachers and thinking about more about pedagogy and also about the various applications beyond mediation that people are finding touches them, and they want to use this to touch other people with what they found out for themselves.
Now, you mentioned a pop and pop shop. You know, one pop is retired. We haven't found a way to for you to be immortal, and so I imagine your retirement's going to come at some point in the next, you know, 20 or 30 years.
Well, Kissinger just made it to 100, but he just died.
Did he? I didn't get the news. Yeah. That's wow. That's incredible. I mean that. Henry Kissinger has been this fixed point in time that I refer to. You know, I think he's visited with every president.
Yes.
I mean, that's just incredible. Wow. Well, what a way to find out. Well, to those of you listening who didn't know, I'm sorry to share with you that Henry Kissinger has finally abdicated the throne. And so well, we wish his family the best.
So it's not a bad model. He wrote a paper. He delivered a paper about 6 weeks ago, and he was, talking with the Chinese premier, in the last couple of weeks. So he kept himself. My intention is to be as active as I can be for as long as I can be, as long as I feel like I have it together to be able to do stuff that people find valuable. So I don't have a timeline on that, but I'm very anxious to be able to. This feeds me to do this work. So it's not like it takes stuff out of me. It doesn't.
Wonderful. And I wasn't trying to press. There was another half to that question, but you threw me with Kissinger. That was truly shocking. Like when Jimmy Carter, when I find Jimmy Carter's no longer with us, it's going to affect me because that man is eternal. and so my question really was, very glad to hear you're going to be with us as long as your wife allows it. And B, is really the transition from a pop and pop, there's two individuals, form this small nonprofit organization. You're really just going where the need is. And there's a demand. People need the training. They want the training. They want to make an impact in their practice and their communities. And over the years, that has changed a bit, right? There are now trainings taking place, coast to coast, online, in person, covering a variety of different topics. How has that evolution been for you from kind of a small, pop and pop operation to now the center and all the work that it's doing?
It's many, many ways. It feels just the same. I did a program a couple of weeks ago at Green Gulch Farm Zen Center, and it didn't feel that different to me being there as it did 40 years ago. Although I'm there with other people that I'm teaching with and other people learning to teach and people there who don't look like me and are serving very different kinds of communities. That's really exciting to see that and to be there and feel the growth and being able to reach people who wouldn't ordinarily be thinking about coming to a program that was run by lawyers. We're not that now. We're law is still an important piece of this. Lawyers are still an important piece of it, but it's not what it's about. It's really about the empowerment, about using, helping people find their way through conflict together.
Throughout the year, the Center for Understanding in Conflict hosts in-depth, basic, and advanced certificate programs designed to train you to become effective mediators and conflict resolution professionals centered in the understanding-based model. Our training programs have been the gold standard in alternative dispute resolution for 40 years and is popular within the legal community with human resource professionals, ombudsmen, and corporate workplace mediation clients. So let's talk a little bit about those changes in, attendee demographics. When you and Jack started, you're both attorneys, you were, the purpose was training attorneys, and, over the years, increasingly, more and more people are coming from just unexpected places looking to apply the model in unexpected ways. And what has that experience been like for you to see this thing that you created with Jack kind of take on a life of its own and start moving through the community in ways that you probably couldn't have imagined when you began?
Oh, it's incredibly gratifying. It really is. Especially when I hear people in a place where I wouldn't even imagine that our model would be useful to them, saying that how touched they are by it and how they're able to use it in their everyday life, their professional life, their personal lives. I love knowing that they find that. And I learn from that. And I see that the reach and the spread of our model is kind of taking on a life of its own now. And I see ideas that we had that sometimes people tell me in ideas that they've learned. And those were my ideas and I'm hearing them back. And so I realized there's no such thing as my, when it comes to ideas. It's like, and that was always our idea. We never wanted any of our materials to be copyrighted we wanted it to be spread and we wanted it to be open and we wanted people to have access. And so, it's really great that it's kind of out there in a way, but we've got this now wanting to develop these teachers and provide teaching opportunities for them, as well as reaching different kinds of people. And so we need to operate as an organization now, which is never anything that any of us, either of us, ever had in mind. We actually thought that was not a good idea, because we saw how often organizations got caught up in just having to perpetuate themselves, and that's what they were working for. And we never wanted to do that. But I can see now that there's a path emerging where that's not happening, and it still feels like it has the original spirit that's there. And I'm quite thrilled to see all that.
You mentioned this next generation of trainers. You know, as we've mentioned before, and many of our listeners are quite well aware, you know, we 2 years ago started the first teacher training cohort. This is the first time that the center in its 40-year history had really taken a concentrated approach to training a crop of the next generation of trainers, not just for the center, but to go out and to teach the model in a formal way, using best practices and pedagogy developed here at the center over all these years. And now starting very soon here, in about a month or two, you and Catherine will be initiating the second cohort. We'll be starting, and I think we've pretty much got, we've got a lot of folks that'll be potentially joining us for that as well. And so what has that shift been like? So we've talked about this beginning that was you and Jack, it's two individuals with a smaller audience, a very specific audience, and how that grew and has moved through communities. And now it's reached this point where you're developing, you know, dozens of trainers with intention to then go out and either seed their own, you know, training practices or continue on with the center to continue that training. What has that experience been like for you? And what did you learn during the process?
I'm very happy that so many people are drawn to this, and unexpected people, unexpected places. And I start to see, getting back from them, how they see possibilities that I never saw. So that's wonderful to feel like the model will evolve, the teaching will evolve. And also there's a coming into the 21st century challenge for geezers like me to be sure that we're, you know, not behind the curve on some of the things that are really important that's happening in the world and society, and for us to be able to reach people in a different kind of way than might have felt comfortable. We were never interested in lecturing. We always wanted to create experience. Experience was always the primary, and the learning, the idea is always followed from the experience. So it's good to feel that. That stays.
This podcast is supported by our CUC Connect members, whose yearly membership includes free attendance to our live monthly webinars, 12 additional featured recordings of past training events, discounts to our basic and advanced training programs, and support from our network of certified trainers for continued professional development. Consider joining CUC Connect today and dive deeper into the understanding-based model.
But what's different, and what's going to continue to be different, is how this will continue to spread. And it's because, you know, social media has made us accessible to all kinds of people that we don't know, we've never met. I mean, I found writing books was just really great, because I would get letters and things back from people saying that I would never be able to talk to or see. But they read the book, and so we were in dialogue that way. But the social media takes that, even expands that, so that people that are in farthest corners of the world, if they have internet access, they can have access to this learning as well. And much as I prefer in person to Zoom, I see that for some people, this is the only way that it's practicable for them to learn. And I think that's really worth doing. And I'm really happy that we're really making efforts to try to reach out to people that we wouldn't otherwise be in contact with. I hope this model never becomes, and it won't, the dominant dispute resolution model. It's too hard. It takes too much. From people, too much commitment. And it's challenging. And so what's great about the fact that it's challenging is that it kind of, the model is hard enough so that the people for whom this is not a priority in their lives will not stay with this. And that's a good thing. They can find other ways to do it. But for people who this touches in a really deep way, I think that, you know, this becomes a kind of lifelong journey, as it's been for me and for Jack. And it's wonderful to feel like we're part of an ever expanding group of people that feel that way. And we support each other, and we are supported by each other. And that's another big thing we're trying to break in the wider world, which is the whole idea of competition. You know, mediators in the early days would be very nervous, and the thing went out very quickly. Oh, don't quit your day job. That was part of our message, if you want to get your mediation practice established. But there are already too many mediators. And my response to that, as it is today, there's a lot of room at the top. And same thing for mediation teachers. Too many mediation teachers, too many organizations. Not true. There's a lot of room at the top. And I think for people that are committed to excellence and that want to stay with us over time, the opportunities are almost limitless.
Thank you, Gary, for being here today to talk about the center's history, your incredible career leading in the field of mediation, and your insights into the future of our work. And as for just being here and supporting, I know for so many people listening, you're still a very big presence in their lives, and you're always available to help, and you continue to teach and work to advance the model and the lives of those who are drawn to it. So thank you so much for being here for the last 40 years. We appreciate you.
Yeah, well, I'm really grateful to have had this opportunity. Thank you, James.
This year, the Center for Understanding and Conflict celebrates 40 years of impact through our training and development programs, training generations of practitioners to bring together parties in conflict through understanding. To learn how to support our mission, please visit www.understandinginconflict.org. Thank you to today's guest for being with us today, and to our CUC Connect members, whose support enables the Center for Understanding and Conflict to bring new perspectives in the field of conflict resolution and mediation to you, our listener, in each new episode. You can find out more about today's episode, along with full interviews and additional information about conflict resolution and mediation using the understanding-based model at www.understandinginconflict.org.